Labor Day, by tradition, marks the end of a long, hot summer. It is the day on which the trade union movement takes stock, examines what has happened, and plans for what must happen. This year, that examination is made in sorrow, for this Labor Day marks the end of a long, sad summer. It has been a summer in which rioting flared in the ghettos and slums which mar our great cities, a summer in which Americans killed each other, and our law enforcement machinery had to be supplemented by the bayonets of the United States Army. No one can condone the riots. No one can excuse them or contend that the course of a free society should be swayed by criminal acts, mob violence, arson, looting, and murder. Nor can anyone condone the conditions in the slums and the ghettos. No one can excuse American society as a whole for tolerating the slums which breed disease and crime, helplessness and anger. Nor should the fact of the riots be used as an excuse for not moving to correct these wrongs. As this summer drew to a close, there were scores of proposals for crash programs to solve the needs of the cities. Groups of concerned citizens united, as free Americans should do, to use their joint strength to help solve the urban problems which plague this nation. And the labor movement has joined wholeheartedly in these efforts. But the tragedy is, only now are we talking about crash programs. And the Congress has yet to adopt the established, recognized, well-researched measures that have been pending before it since last January. Most of these measures, I must add, have been suggested, urged, demanded by the AFL-CIO, not for months, but for years. But recriminations are no better than idle talk, and this is not a time for idle talk. This is a time to fix responsibility and to decide what can be done to correct the failures of the past. Let us acknowledge that we all share in the responsibility, but let us not hesitate to place the greatest burden of responsibility where it belongs, upon the Congress of the United States. It is the Congress that has failed in its responsibilities, failed miserably. Only about 2 weeks ago, President Johnson called attention to 23 programs affecting urban problems which have been pending before Congress since the session opened last January. Not one of these programs has been enacted. Yet, for the most part, these 23 programs are merely extensions or continuations of undertakings already in being. They represent the essential follow-up to the great beginning made by the 88th and especially the 89th Congress, the fulfillment of promises already made and of hopes already aroused. They include such familiar subjects as housing, urban renewal, education, community and mental health facilities, school lunches, model cities, mass transit, economic opportunities, and civil rights. The need for all these has long been stressed by the AFL-CIO. The need was confirmed by earlier Congresses through legislative action. But that earlier confirmation has been revoked by indifference and corrupted by false economy. There was the spectacle of the House of Representatives, in theory, the most responsive to the nation's needs, making crude and cruel jokes about a proposal to wipe out rats and rejecting it, too. More than 20 years ago, Congress enacted the Taft-Ellender-Wagner Act and set as a national goal the creation of good housing for every American family at a price within its means. But subsequent Congresses have been deaf to all pleas for enough money to move toward this goal. The housing shortage has steadily become worse. Even more disgraceful has been the indifference or outright hostility of local officials. The fact is, and listen to it carefully, that more than 200,000 housing units for which Congress has provided funds have not yet been built. They have been delayed and frustrated by local office holders, who are less concerned by slums than by federal housing, especially integrated housing. So while the inaction, the insensitivity, and the blindness of Congress is the chief barrier, let us recognize that there are other barriers as well. including some that each of us could do something about in our own communities. Housing is just one problem among many. As I mentioned earlier, the President cited 23 proposals that Congress had neglected. If all of these had been enacted 6 months ago, there might not be a crisis today. But if all of them were enacted tomorrow, the crisis would still be in being. The need for long-range cures remains, but there is even more urgent need for short-range remedies. By far, the greatest immediate need is for jobs. At least 1 million new jobs at good wages in socially productive work for the presently unemployed. A bill that would create these jobs has been introduced by Congressman O'Hara of Michigan and 76 other members of the House of Representatives. It has our support, and it should have yours as well. This is a government program, for government must take the initiative, and government must be the employer of last resort. It would give meaning and substance to a federal act that has been on the statute books for nearly 20 years, the landmark Employment Act of 1946. It would start where the task must start, by providing decent jobs for Americans who want them and need them. And it would put these people to work doing some of the things left undone in America. There are some who brush this idea aside as another WPA, another Works Progress Administration, like that created by President Roosevelt during the depth of the Great Depression, to provide jobs for the unemployed, who then numbered between 12 and 15 million. Because many of the then jobless were youngsters without skills, or older workers whose skills could not readily be adopted to short-run projects, WPA was sneered at as leaf-raking, a sort of busy work of no real value. So as one who well and favorably remembers the WPA period, I say, the WPA needs no apologies. It provided useful work, rewarding and self-respecting work to millions who had almost lost hope of finding it. The WPA opened new vistas to millions of youngsters. It allowed thousands of artists to develop their talents and thousands of artisans to develop their skills. The WPA restored the shattered faith of millions of those who were called old and too old by the society of that time, men in their 40s and 50s whose established jobs had been destroyed by the economic catastrophe and who were denied a chance at new ones. These men and women, young and old, helped build roads and public parks. They painted murals and wrote histories. They contributed in great measure to the physical and cultural values of American life. But let's talk about the O'Hara bill for a moment. It called for a massive investment in the form of grants to federal, state, and local government agencies and to private nonprofit organizations, to help them bear the cost of providing 1 million new jobs a year to people who are now unemployed or seriously underemployed. The bill does not specify the kinds of jobs that can be offered, but it clearly envisages that what would be called entrance jobs, jobs in urban improvement, jobs as teacher's aides, hospital aides, jobs on reforestation projects, jobs which the economy needs and which the unemployed need, but jobs which do not now exist. And these 1 million new jobs are needed, and they are needed right now. But that's not all. The President's list of 23 items dealt primarily with urban affairs. True, this is where the worst problems are found. But in considering the whole panorama of a better and more secure America, other matters appear. At the head of such a list is Social Security, like so much else on the agenda of unfinished business, a magnificent concept tarnished by faulty upkeep. The Social Security system badly needs improvement, far greater improvement in all aspects than the House of Representatives provided in a bill it sent to the Senate last month. Also, far more must be done to clean American rivers and to purify the air. Consumers must have greater safeguards against deceit and fraud. Unemployment compensation must be made really meaningful in every state. And the list could go on and on. The crucial point is this. In the context of today, these are not long-range undertakings based on a distant dream. They carry today's date. Yesterday's question was, should we? Today's answer is, we must. Let us face the realities. These vital measures will be enacted only under the most powerful pressure by the American people, exerted upon a reluctant Congress. No leader or group of leaders, no matter how eloquent, no matter how influential in their own spheres, can bring about the adoption of these programs without the clear and active support of the voters back home. For there are still many who argue that the United States, engaged in a costly fight for freedom in Vietnam, cannot afford the cost of domestic progress. This is disastrous in principle and false in fact. It is disastrous in principle because America cannot truly stand for the security of free people abroad if it fails to provide true security for its people at home. It is false in fact because the resources of this nation, the richest and most powerful the world has ever seen, are ample for both tasks, which in any case cannot be viewed separately. Yes, taxes will need to go up. The affluent will need to devote a small part of their affluence to the cause. But Americans have never shrunk from sacrifice equally applied. And the sacrifice represented by a tax increase is modest indeed, measured against the stakes involved. We do not believe that the tax increase proposed by the administration is equitably applied. We have offered a proposal of our own that would bring in more money with less strain on the average taxpayer. I do not have time to describe it, but we would be glad to provide the details about it to anyone who writes it. Essentially, I have no doubt that the overwhelming majority of Americans are committed to these two great causes: a just, humane society at home, ever improving, ever more secure, and the right of peoples everywhere to pursue their own destiny in peace and freedom. The dissenters on both sides are noisy, but they do not represent the national will. The national will must be made clear to Congress, and I am confident it will be heeded. It will be heeded most effectively if you make your own views known to your congressman while he is at home during the Labor Day recess. Let me conclude by repeating my basic point. Congress holds the key to the future. Congress must use that key to open the gates of progress. Progress that today is not just desirable, but urgently necessary. Let us all join in a united campaign to see that the key is used, and that the gates to a better and more secure America, a better and safer world, are opened wide.
Thank you, Mr. Meany. The National Broadcasting Company has presented an annual Labor Day talk by George Meany, president of the AFL-CIO.
The National Safety Council presents
Bob and Ray's Rules for the Holiday Road.
1. The minute old Uncle Harry loses his hearing aid, take his car keys away.
2. Remember, Uncle Harry knows how to jump the ignition, so if you're driving, watch out.
3. Tighten your seatbelt. I think I see him coming now.